From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I think of them as investment plants, plants that might not be hardy where I garden, but with a little extra work and the right strategy can be carried over year to year, even without a greenhouse or the perfect spot to do so. Nobody I know has more investment plants than the list of about 1,600 kinds of unusual annuals and tropicals that Dennis Schrader and the team at Landcraft Environments propagates to sell wholesale to nurseries and landscapers and botanical gardens. And he's here today to encourage us to start a collection too and tell us how to keep them happy. But first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
With his husband, Bill Smith, Dennis Schrader has, since 1992, operated Landcraft Environments in Matatuck, Long Island, specialists in unusual plants that add seasonal color and texture, the look of the tropics, to the garden. I'm so glad to welcome him back to the show today and get some of his tactical advice and also steer us to some plants that we should consider investing in. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Margaret.
How's it out there?
Fall is here.
Yes.
It's great. It's cooling off. Very nice.
Yes. So before we get started, I should say I was so happy that we did that New York Times story together a couple of weeks ago about this subject, the mad stash, right?
Yeah. That was fun.
And thank you. It was very popular, and it was fun to read the comments. Lots of people jumping in and saying their successes and their failures with different plants, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So this is something people love to do, is try to figure out, right, how to carry over a beloved plant. So
Yeah.
You identified several sort of tactical categories, like, because not every plant will want the same thing. And I just thought, to survive the winter in this sort of false environment, you know, not their native habitat. And I just wondered, can you tell us about sort of how you grouped them and how you thought about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, we get these plants either given to us or purchased, and we nurture them all summer, and then we want to do something with them. We just don't not have them hit by a frost, and that's it. So, a lot of it has been experimenting with different types of overwintering. And some of the easiest ways are collecting from seed and doing cuttings, or even just actually bringing the plant inside and treating it as a house plant. There's different ways to store them.
Some even store dormant, like bring it in as a houseplant and keep it awake, or bring it in as
right.
a houseplant and let it nap. And that's one of the things that I frequently, earlier on in my gardening career, I used to try to keep everybody awake, and some would rather go to sleep, right?
Right. And you also run out of room. It's a space issue most of the time. I've tried, even hibiscus bushes and brugmansias, that would normally grow all year. Just putting them in a basement and keeping them on the dry side and dark. And, they'll have some die back, but then, you get them going in the spring, and they really take off. Because most plants do have a slowdown or dormant period, either from cool or in the tropics. A lot of times it's from dry weather. You'll have a rainy season and then a dry season. So, there is, you try and mimic maybe the dry season, and we'll just let them defoliate, rake up the leaves, and hold on to them till spring.
I think that you recommended that for some of our fancy leaf geraniums, yes?
Yeah, oh, sure, yeah. I know someone that used to hang them. It would bare root them and just hang them in their basement and then plant them again in the spring. So it can be pretty radical. And what I find also is if you have success with one type of plant or a treatment of one type of plant, try it with some other ones. And had another friend that used to keep Anseti, the red leaf Abyssinian bananas. He would, it got so big with this huge trunk, he would keep it under his dining room table. And, it would do fine, you know, except for you kick it. It's like, you think it was a dog or something under there. You look at it, this 6-foot stump. But it worked for him.
So the banana under the dining table, is that going to be in the reference book about this?
Yeah, all right.
So what we're really trying to do is we're trying to sort of categorize things as we look around the fading garden right now, wherever we garden, match them to the right tactic. So like with seed, like what would be the kind of, what are just a few examples of like things to do from seed?
Oh, zinnias. Marigolds, those are some of the common annuals, abelmoschus. And it's, you know, the plant kind of lets you know when it's done blooming, it's starting to turn a little bit brown, looking a little bit dry, and it's you know, shorter days, cooler weather. Those are all indicators to start looking. Morning glories are another, you know, the vining morning glories.
Right.
And you know, they start looking a little tattered, like they've done their big show for the season, and then it's time to harvest, and you want the seed pods to be ripe, but not ripe enough where they, you know, open up, and a lot of plants will expel their seeds and kind of open up and shoot the seeds, you know, around. You want to wait before that happens, or else use some kind of a net bag or something like that to hold the seeds and catch the seeds.
Right.
So it's you know, commercially, we go out twice a week and do the rounds to all the seed plants that we'll be collecting. And we're right on top of it.
I loved the pictures that you sent me for the New York Times article that you took for us that were like these turkey trays, you know, the aluminum roasting pans filled with seed. Someone in the staff would cut off the flower stems that were dried into these pans, and it'd be like trays of them. I guess you bring them in to dry.
Yeah, we keep them on our racks, basically, not oven racks, but you know, just like on a cart, and we keep them in the trays. Some of them we have to cover with. We use when we get corn. Ears of corn is that net bag, or you get bulbs in them. Sometimes we keep them covered with that because they do shoot and explode, kind of. So each one has a little kind of nuance that has to be taken care of. But basically, it has to be dried and good air circulation. That's why we keep them on the racks. And then when they're totally dry, we bag them in Ziploc bags. Most importantly, labeling them. And then we store them in a dry, cool place.
Mm. Did you like, when you first started doing this and you started to ramp up and realize this was, I mean, you were doing landscape design build kind of firm years ago, and then you couldn't get the plants necessarily that you craved for your clients and your designs. And you started little by little, I'm oversimplifying, but you started little by little to propagate them yourself. And then, oops, suddenly you ended up with a farm and a greenhouse range, you know, range of greenhouses and a business doing this wholesale.
Right.
But did you like, I mean, a lot of the things that you have become known for and have disseminated into the garden trade, they weren't like the mainstays like marigolds and, you know, petunias or whatever. They, I mean, you have those, but they were unusual things. So like, did you look up the life history of the plant and like what its native surroundings are like? How did you figure it out, or research it in books, or how did you figure out what to do?
Back in the day, wasn't Google to check things or the internet. So a lot of it was reference books, and then also just trial and error. I mean, some of the seed catalogs, like Thompson and Morgan, they you know, list thousands and thousands of plants, and that was one of the inspirations, was seeing all these plants, but it's like, where can I get these? So I'm going to start growing them. And it was you know, just hunting, finding things. And one of our plants I found, it was it's a roadside weed in Costa Rica, but it's got this great, you know, silver foliage and little pink flowers. And so we find things all over the place, and trading and with friends and institutions, like our black leaf cotton, which we got originally from Wave Hill, and it was way back when Marco Stefano was working there. And he gave us some seed, and we kept it and were growing it for years. And then one year they lost their crop, and it got too cold before it set seed. So then we gave it back to them, and then the same thing happened to us. We lost the seed, and they gave it back to us. So, you know, it's always like a lot of sharing.
Pen pals. It's not like
right. Seed pals.
Well, and it's funny, when we did the New York Times story again recently, we were talking about storing bulbs and bulb-like things, tubers and so forth, and we can talk about those in a second. But I said, oh, yeah, when I store my Canna Musifolia or Canna Grande, and you, like, interrupted me. You're like, you have that? I think that came from us. And you don't have it anymore.
Right. Yeah, we, with the mosaic virus, we had to get rid of our stock. And so I've been looking for it. So I'm still waiting for that package to come.
There might be a package heading south. Yes, there might be a package.
Great.
I've been collecting sturdy boxes since we spoke. But that and that's what I love about horticulture, really, is like the remembrance of where every plant came from. Like you just said, that roadside weed with the silver leaves in Costa Rica, you know, the provenance, and you, do you know that sort of sense of Dan Hinckley and I were talking about this recently because of his book about his garden at Wyndcliff. And how he walks around every morning in the garden and he sees his friends' faces because of the plants. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah,
you must
that's
have
so
that
true.
Too.
Yeah. We have a lot of plants from the original Heronswood nursery, and some of them even have those little blue labels sticking out of the ground.
That's so funny, because that's what I started when we did our interview recently. I said to him, I did the intro and said, you know, every year when I do my spring cleanup, I find turquoise plastic labels in my garden.
Right.
So we're all just one big, happy, crazy family. So you said before, trial and error, you know, that's how you learned it in some cases. And I mean, one thing that for me, you know, you have to be willing to invest, and maybe the investment doesn't pay off, right? Like any investment. So I bought Formiums years ago. I love the New Zealand flax, the sort of vertical, almost it looks grass-like, but it's broader textured foliage, colorful.
Similar to iris. Foliage.
Yeah, they look like iris.
Good, but colorful. Exactly. Very colorful.
Yeah, and I love them in the center of big pots and stuff, you know. But, and they're not cheap at retail, and I wanted to carry them over. And, you know, I failed a few times. And, and I think, you know, but it was worth it, because now I kind of nailed it. And I was trying to keep them too warm. I was thinking they're from a warmer zone. So you know what I mean? I was like trying to keep them actively growing almost, and that's not good.
It didn't work. No, they would want to cool down and just stay right above freezing, or just in the high 30s is fine for them, and dry side.
And you would never think that at first. You know, we think tropical or subtropical or tender, and we think, oh, got to keep it warm, got to keep it warm. But it's a little counterintuitive, right?
Yeah, well, a lot of South African plants, like Agapanthus, are similar to that, where they can, just be right around freezing and they'll be all right. The Condopetalum, that grassy plant, on a lot of the restios, what else is interesting is if a plant is grown at a higher altitude, then a lot of times it can take cooler weather than you would think, even if it is a quote-unquote tropical plant.
Right.
It's much cooler up at higher altitudes.
Right. And compared to trying to push them in the low light season here in the north, right, push them to keep growing, to stay active, it's more merciful, really, let them slow down, right?
Nice long winter rest, yeah.
Right. Even if, like the Formium, they have foliage, and so they don't want to be in the dark in the cellar with that pelargonium, the fancy leaf geranium, the pelargonium we were talking about, or the tropical hibiscus that's going to be leafless, or the brugmansia that's going to, they're going to defoliate, right? So not like that, but also not warm and active growing and being watered once or twice a week, et cetera, et cetera. It's like we're backing off on everything and letting them just hover in a way.
Right. Like a covered porch that, you know, you would want to use for three seasons, and then in the fourth season you can store plants in there sometimes if it isn't going to freeze, or you just put in like a minimal little heater or something just to keep it above freezing. And sometimes that's all you need. It's a nice sunny porch, but or if it's attached to a house, sometimes that even makes it warm enough. You just open the door and let it warm up.
Insulated garage, and there was a window that was on the bright side, and for some reason those phormiums just, it was super cool, but there was plenty of light, and they just did so much better than where I tortured them in the past. So, you know, So people may be looking outside now or soon, depending on where they live, and you know, like, oh, the dahlias got frosted, oh, the cannas got, you know, blasted with frost. And they think that's it, but it's not it, is it?
No.
Those are some of the easiest, right?
That's the that's the signal that it's time to time to harvest, especially dahlias, because they're such usually most of them are just late season and they enjoy this cool weather. Like right now, our dahlias are going gangbusters in full bloom, and we're getting big bouquets every day, and. You know, then when after we have a first killing frost, where it's down below 32, and then, you know, the foliage will turn brown or black, and the plant might even get a little mushy, but you dig it out and cut it off, leaving, you know, about an inch or two of stem, and then you have all the bulblets hanging out like fingers almost, and just keeping them, and then it can be packed into crates with... or bags with either mulch or hay or peat moss or wrapped in newspaper. There's so many different techniques like that.
And you do you dry them first? Do you sort of cure them first a little
bit? Yeah, we let them air dry for a couple of days. And then again, it's almost, I like to tell people to, you know, think about like overwintering potatoes. You know, if you have like a root cellar, you're trying to mimic the... a root cellar condition, you know, dark and cool but not freezing. And
so
potatoes will last for a
maybe.
Long time. And if it's too warm, you'll see they'll start growing. So it's the same thing with a dahlia bulb or cannas or ecomas.
Yeah, the ecomas are funny. They're the pineapple lilies. You know, I had bought them over the last, they've become sort of a thing, you know, a popular thing increasingly. So, and you have a lot of nice selections with pretty leaves, purple leaves or spotted leaves or whatever, besides the flowers. And, you know, I always just dragged the pots in. I'd have them in pots and I'd drag the pots in because I'm in zone five, so they aren't hardy in the ground. And, but the pots, it's heavy getting into the basement, you know, all that. And I guess, could I unpot more of these things? I mean, I guess I could unpot them.
Yeah, those could be, because they are hardy into zone seven, and occasionally in six with some mulch, but they could be bare-rooted and, again, put into a net bag or a crate or something and stored that way.
So and in then, like bark mulch or something like that?
Yeah, bark mulch, straw, hay, you know, hulls. Sometimes there's rice hulls or even packing peanuts. I mean, if you have a box with packing peanuts, you get, you know, a shipment in or with something, that works.
Now, I'm saving those to ship you the cannas.
I can keep my eye out for that.
Yeah. So like say I have the dahlias and I've let them get frosted and I've cut them back and I've dried them for a few days or a week, you know, I've let them cure a little bit and then I'm going to pack them. Is it important to like keep each clump of tubers or tubers separate, like not just throw them in a big pile together in the packing material? Should there be packing material between each one, or do you wrap them in newspaper first or any other sort of tricks?
You know,
do I check on them?
It's really what you have time for and how you've had success. I mean, we've done it both ways. Individual wrapping, again, something really important with dahlias is labeling if you need specific colors. I always recommend trying something, and if it works, then just keep doing it. If you're doing something right, like your formium, you finally found something that worked for it, and then try some other plants maybe that would fit into that category and make it easier for yourself. You don't want to make it too much of a chore.
Right.
We can sometimes we'll divide them all, spray them with an anti-desiccant. We'll actually let them dry and then spray them with an anti-desiccant and then wrap them. But that's we're trying to keep as many as possible for as long as possible too.
Right.
Cuttings. I mean, that's another way to go out and just start taking cuttings. You don't want to wait too late in the season for that, but that's another great way of overwintering plants or some of your favorite plants.
Like coleus.
Yes. Yeah. Coleus, very easy. Root right in water.
Yes. And those sweet potato vines.
Yeah. And begonias, impatiens. Yeah. There's a lot of things that you can root with in water.
Yeah. I wanted to spend the last couple few minutes. I wanted to know, are there some, you have 1,600 kinds of plants or whatever in the list right now. And by the way, people can't order from you as individuals, but you do ship in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast and so forth, and from like Maine to Maryland. And you have a list. I'll give the link with the transcript of the show to the list of retailers on your website. And I'm just going to say out loud to people, I go to my garden center in the off season and I say, what are you ordering from? I ask them about things that I want that are on a wholesale list like yours, and nudge, to order a tray of something.
Sure.
It's okay to ask our garden centers to think about specific items, right, that they can get from wholesalers that we can't. So,
right. Yeah, we do that a lot. We'll get a special order from a garden center specifically for a client. So that's
right.
That works well.
So don't be afraid to do that, everyone listening, is to say really, because it is possible, and the garden center is still going to make the markup. It's not like you're inconveniencing anybody. So but are there some in the last couple of minutes, are there some hot tropicals or unusual annuals that you're wanting, craving, besides the canna that I'm sending back to you, that you're wanting to find that add to the palette? Is there like a thing right now that you're after, on the hunt for?
Oh,
you have everything.
I think there's a lot. I mean, I really like colorful foliage.
Yes.
That's anything that, or variegated foliage is really, I just love variegated foliage. Just oddball things. I've been collecting, for myself now, just a lot of cordiciform plants with like big fat bases on them.
Yes.
And we do offer a few. I know this.
I didn't know that you did that, because I have my oldest house plants it's now called Pseudobombax, but it was called Bombax ellipticum, the shaving brush tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it's massive in my living room. I've had it for about 30 years, and I grow a number of other things with swollen bases that are like their storage organs. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I started collecting them years and years ago, and we have a nice collection. And then we also do have some that we can sell. Foliage color, there's always new cultivars coming out, great elephant ears with different shaped leaves. There's one, it's called Pharaoh's Mask, that almost looks like a wrinkled forehead, and it's apple green with these dark stripings on it. It's kind of interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
And if not so many years ago, the elephant ears, it was like just the plain old elephant ears. And now, wow.
Yeah, there's hundreds of varieties.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm always experimenting with which ones want to be kept sort of half awake like a house plant and which ones want to go to sleep. And oh boy, that's a whole nother subject.
Yeah, as a general rule of thumb, alocasia usually do better as a houseplant than colocasia.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, Dennis, I had such fun, and I, like I said, I can't wait to pack up the goods and send them down there because it sort of completes the circle for us.
on that. And we'll have it for you next time if you need it.
Yeah, so. No, it's sweet. It's really sweet. But I'm so glad to reconnect and learn more, and thank you so much. Thanks for making time for us today.
Oh, very welcome. Great speaking with you.
Talk to you soon again.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full-gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
And talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy stashing plants and gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.